Welcome back to The Look and Sound of Leadership, an ongoing series of executive coaching tips designed to help you be perceived in the workplace the way you want to be perceived. I'm Tom Henschel, your executive coach, and today we're talking about Ask the Coaches, your questions. We're back with Mindy Dana. Hi, Mindy.
Hello, Tom. I'm delighted to be back.
It's great to have you back. And we are answering questions that you all sent to us. Keep those letters coming because Mindy and I will do another episode later this year. These are occasional episodes. I'm going to start by reading an email from Jesse. We don't know if Jesse is a man or a woman, but we've decided that it's a woman, so we'll see. Here we go. I'm an assistant manager at Walmart. I really want to continue to move up within the company. I've been promoted 5 times since I started 4 years ago. I reached the salaried level with my last promotion. Now, I feel as if I still have that hourly mindset, and I want to be more professional and more proficient in my management style. I need to learn how not to be so nice. Also, I need to learn how to manage through my people so I can have a day off here and there. My last day off was in September and still no end in sight, because if I'm not there, nothing will be completed to my standards. Do you have any tips for me to grow as a successful manager?
Well, first of all, Jesse, I'm struck by how quickly you've moved up in the organization. So congratulations to you. To get 5 promotions in 4 years says a lot about what they see in you and your abilities. So congratulations. And I can see why, because already I can see that you've identified kind of the real crux of this issue. And that is you're saying, I need to change my mindset. And that's actually one of the most foundational things to moving from a doer role to a management role. There are absolutely some skills and abilities that you need to cultivate, and we can talk a little bit about those, but first and foremost, it's a change in mindset. And that really is a transformative kind of journey from, I've been the really stellar individual performer, which is great when you are just that, but when you become a manager, that actually can kind of get in your way, because now your job is to be responsible for developing your people, developing your team to do the work. You're not the doer, you're the kind of the cultivator. You know, you're the influencer in this equation. So you've identified that shift in mindset. And I think just the first tip I would say is the fact that you have that perspective is really valuable, and to have patience and compassion for yourself as you make that transition, because it really is an identity kind of shift. The other thing I noticed is, as far as skills are concerned, you mentioned the thing about, I need to not be so nice. And that really resonated with me, because I remember my first manager job where I thought, oh, I need to be nice for them to do things that I want them to do. And you actually don't have control over the behavior. What you do have control over are creating the conditions for them to develop and thrive. And so as it relates to being nice, the question I would ask you is, in your own history with managers or supervisors, when have you really wanted to do your best work for somebody else? What is it that they did, that they instilled in you? What were the conditions that they created that made you really want to work hard to achieve and develop? And I'm going to bet that part of that ingredient was that they demonstrated that they cared about you as a person. Now, that's different than looking nice, but if you can genuinely say, I care about this person, and therefore, because I care, I may have to lean into some difficult conversations sometimes, then I'll do that. What do you think, Tom?
I picked up on the same 2 pieces, this idea of the mindset piece, and I wondered what it meant to Jesse to be hourly mindset. I think of hourly mindset as being very transactional. Like, I'm doing this, and if I put in the time, then I get paid for it. But Jesse is now thinking about being more professional, being more proficient in management, to which I go, great, that means you're taking on a different kind of responsibility. So I applaud it. Good for you. This idea of being nice, to me, what I heard in that immediately was, oh, I wonder if Jesse is scared of giving feedback. I'm going to hurt their feelings. They won't like me, whatever. And that connects to me to this idea of, I can't take a day off because if I don't take a day off, well, nothing will get done to my standards. Listen, Jesse, I want you to be realistic. When you're gone, things may not go exactly the way they would be if you were there. That's true, but that's appropriate. That's how you develop your people. And I would like to think that you are not going to get in trouble for that. That's actually how you develop your team, how you develop your people. So make your expectations clear before you go. Understand that when you come back, some things will go well and you will give feedback on that, and some things won't have gone well. That's everybody's job. So I wouldn't see that as a problem so much as that's how you become proficient as a manager. Those are my thoughts.
And along those lines, I wanted to say there's so many books written about management, but one that I have found really, really useful, and I think I mentioned it in our last podcast together, Tom, it's a book called Being the Boss, and it's written by Linda Hill, and it's a really great sort of foundational book around moving from sort of individual performer to manager, and I recommend it highly.
I just want to say in closing, Jesse, this journey from being, quote, nice to being effective, I know that I've been on that journey. Oh my, I have been on that journey. I've watched Mindy on that journey, and so many of my clients. So I just want to say you're not alone in this, and I think it's great that you're on it. Keep going. So shall we go to number two?
Let's do it. This is from Tomas. I'm currently dealing with a boss that is too critical and negative. In December, I initiated an internship in a very interesting role. Daily, I get to interact with super smart people and be part of exciting projects. One of the team members just resigned, so I have the chance to convert into a full-time job. My supervisor is very smart and has a lot of influence in the company, but is also highly critical and negative. Since the opportunity opened up, I have worked hard on taking things off his plate. I believe that I've contributed positively. However, I feel that sometimes I miss his expectations. I collect his opinion and guidance before I act on my responsibilities. My intention is to make my supervisor feel that I build on his vision. That being said, I have the impression that my work isn't adding much value. Proper feedback will be given soon, but I think there might be other things I could do to improve the situation.
Tomas, this is so interesting. So many parts to this. One part that I just want to reflect on, Mindy and I both do a lot of work in Silicon Valley where the whole idea of being either a contractor or temporary or hourly versus full-time is a real thing. So I can understand that that might be part of what's influencing you here, is that you feel you're kind of in an probationary stage or you're kind of on a permanent audition, and that that might create a kind of tension for you. I want to say to you, thinking about that and putting limits on yourself, like how can I get it right, is actually not helpful. Show up the way you're going to show up. So be bold in that sense. The second piece that I really want to address here is actually in one of the last sentences you write about proper feedback will be given soon, to which I go, why are you waiting? Like, okay, proper feedback will be given soon, but you think this boss is critical, negative, whatever. But you need the feedback. If you have a concern that you're not adding much value, the only way to actually find out whether that's true or not is to ask. When you ask for feedback, I think you will filter it through this idea of, is this your boss just being critical and negative? But what I think what you really want to listen for is around the value piece. You have some sense you're not adding value? I would ask about that.
Love that. What comes to mind with this one, Tomas, is another resource. This is one of my other go-to books, and it's called Thanks for the Feedback, and it's by Sheila Heen and Douglas Stone. And it's fantastic. The premise of the book is, wow, we spend a lot of time teaching people how to give feedback, but what about how we receive it? Because our relationship with how we receive feedback certainly impacts how we give it. In this case, one of the things that might be helpful for you to think about is they talk about there's three kinds of feedback in the book. And the first one is evaluation. That's just what it sounds like, where there's a certain standard that's been set and you want to know how you've stacked up against that standard. That's evaluation feedback. The second one is coaching. And that one is, I want to get better. I want to develop in a certain way. And so that's a different kind of feedback and a slightly different kind of conversation. And the last one is appreciation. And that's just what it sounds like. I want to know that I'm doing a good job. Now, those things can sort of be commingled in any conversation, but I think when you're going in to ask for feedback, Tomas, being clear about what it is you're looking for If there's a mismatch between what kind of feedback you're looking and what your supervisor is giving you, that can be part of the tension. So for example, if you are really looking for some appreciation for working really hard to take things off his or her plate, and he or she thinks that, well, I'm going to give Tomas some evaluative feedback, there's a mismatch there. So being clear on what you want. So going in and saying, this is the kind of feedback I'm looking for. I either want to know how I've done in relation to what you were hoping to get, or I'd like to know how I could get better. They can be part of the same conversation, but they're slightly different asks.
So if Tomas is concerned he's not adding value, which kind of feedback do you think he's asking for?
I would think it's a little bit of all three. And I would say, first of all, I want to know, am I doing okay? That's sort of asking for, it's a bit of evaluation. And again, there's not a bright line between these three, but I think it has to do with intention and what you're looking for, what kind of feedback you're seeking. So you want to know, it sounds like there's a little bit of, and I can imagine this if I were in your shoes, there's a little bit of appreciation. Wow, I've really seen you working hard to take things off my plate, and I really appreciate that. That probably would feel really good.
But this boss who's critical and negative probably is not going to do that.
May not, but that may be because that boss thinks, hey, my role is to give Tomas a sense of how he can get better at doing this. And so I'm going to let him know how he is or is not meeting the standard. So you may be looking for some appreciation and then some sense of how am I doing against what you expected. Sounds like that's a big piece of it. And lastly, how can I get better? Because I'm stepping into this role in a bigger sort of way. I want to know how I can continue to thrive and get better in it.
I want to add one more piece here, which we haven't touched on yet. One of the things that I really noticed in your email, Tomas, was your idea of, I've worked hard on taking things off his plate. I just want to say, yes, that's your job. That's all of our jobs. When we manage our boss is to take work off their plate. Don't bring them problems and put them on their plate. Take it off. And I talk about this in detail in an episode called Managing Up. So that part sounds like it's going really well. Again, your boss may not acknowledge that, but good for you for doing it.
Should we move on to number three?
Number three is from Lynette. And she writes, having difficult conversation with an equal colleague who does great work, however, always needs to be heard without giving others the chance to be heard. She also thinks she's an expert on everything, therefore she becomes the only voice being heard. I would love to know how to have a conversation about the importance of others feeling like they are valuable members of the team and how it's important to make room for others to be heard too.
This one's bringing up all sorts of things for me.
Oh, really?
The first question I would want to ask is, what's the hardest part about this for you? Because it seems to me that this is triggering you a little bit. The question is sort of, how do I actually give feedback, or how do I have this difficult conversation? But I'd step back first and say, and inquire about your intention. So what's the hardest part about this? Is it that you feel like she's hogging all the space and you don't have any space to offer your value? Or is it that you really see that she's kind of getting in the way of the development of the team or the group communication that's going on? So those are a little bit different. I would invite you to sort of what I call sort of step to the balcony for a moment, and that is sort of zoom out and sort of reflect on what's really going on in that situation. Why am I getting triggered by this? Or is it really that I just really want to help her be a more effective communicator in a group setting? And then, this is another feedback conversation. And then, given that she's a colleague, if you decide that, yeah, I actually really want to help her and I notice that there's this pattern of hers, I would say that I always like to start from a place of empathy. So do you notice any patterns as to when she is sort of chronically and serially kind of taking up a lot of space? Do you think it's a situation where she feels like, oh my gosh, this is high stakes, I need to add value, I'm not sure I have a seat at the table here, I'm not sure I deserve to be at the table? I realize I'm creating a lot of story here, but those are some questions that I would want to wonder about. Is she feeling threatened in some sort of a way? Because I think if you have that sense of empathy, it may invite you into the conversation with her in a different sort of way. So at that point, you can say, wow, that staff meeting, those are really challenging and kind of stressful, aren't they? She's like, oh, yeah, they are. So I've noticed that, and I feel that way sometimes too. I'm wondering, do you mind if I give you some feedback? So once you sort of create a sense of caring and connection, and then ask, does she want the feedback? Or he, or she, this is a she. She may not. But by asking permission and doing it from a place or an intention of caring and adding value, that's a good place to start.
I have a little different take on this. And I think it's formed from my experience in theater as a professional actor, where, you know, I'm on stage in a scene with you, Mindy, let's say, and I just know that you're missing a beat or you're missing something. Like, if you would do that line differently, then I could do my line differently. It's none of my business. It is not my job to direct the scene. It is not my job to shape your performance. Now, we might have the kind of relationship where we can do that with each other, but that is built up over time. But in general, it is not my job to manage your performance. And I think that's one of the problems with peers, is peers are often the people who annoy the hell out of us, but we're not actually responsible for their performance, and often they do not welcome our feedback. So, you know, going up to a peer and saying, hey, can I give you some feedback? I think most people are going to look and go, who are you? Like, no. Like, what? So unless it's a really well-developed relationship that's really safe, then I would say great. But given that you see this woman as kind of needy, needing to be an expert, taking up all the air in the room, I just think that she is not going to change. And the question then that I have for you, Lynette, is how do you want to show up? Your choice. You could go to your boss and complain. You could go to this woman and tell her she's making a mistake. Or you could talk to other peers and go, isn't she? Oh my God, if you know, you could do all that. I don't think it's a good moment for you. So how do you want to show up in the face of this person who sounds annoying?
Yeah, and to build on that, I'm struck by what we know about team performance. And I think I mentioned in our last podcast, Tom, the study that came out of Google called the Aristotle study about high performing teams and sort of what's the X factor that makes, you know, high performing teams just that. And something that we do know, and I don't think this is going to be a shock to anybody, and that's high levels of trust and psychological safety are really key to high team performance. So in that regard, while I agree with you to a point, Tom, I personally feel if I'm on a team and I want to be a part of a high-performing team, I feel a sense of responsibility for contributing to a culture and a set of norms around psychological safety, in which case I think we're all on the hook for helping each other get better.
Listen, if that's the way the team works, that's great. And it's funny, I was just talking with a team leader about this recently, where my concern was that everybody in the team was coming to her as the point. And I was saying, no, you want them to get talking to each other. It's like mom who always has to mediate between the siblings. It's like, mom, get yourself out of there. Like, that's not a good place to be. Let the siblings work it out. That's great if the team leader has created that culture. And I agree, if that's there, the way Lynette writes, my spidey sense says that that is not what's happening on this team. So good luck, Lynette. I can't wait to hear how this goes. Before we get to the last email from all of you, let me jump in here with two quick things. First, gratitude. It's been a great month. I've been talking with listeners about coaching, about working with your teams, about the Improv for Leaders course. That's been really fun. They've all been wonderful conversations. It's great to talk with you all. Thank you for being in touch. And thanks to those of you who sign up for the HTML version of the tips. Thanks to the folks who reach out and ask for the various supporting resources that go along with the episodes. Thanks, too, to folks who are sending in emails with questions for us to answer on these shows. That's just been great. Thank you. And, of course, to those of you who take time to post reviews in iTunes. Hey, by the way, I don't mean to exclude other platforms. If you're posting reviews in Stitcher or Overcast or anywhere else, please let me know. I would love to thank you on the air. This month, the people that I'm thanking from iTunes are from Canada, UZF123, from here in the U.S., Mark St. Ong, and JJ Silly. Thank you to all of you, to all of you who have ever posted any reviews. If you appreciate the podcast, that is such a meaningful way to express your thanks. And that's my thanks. That was number one, gratitude. Number two, resources for you. After this next letter, you're going to hear me mention the archive and using the filters there. The archive is the free repository of all the episodes going back 11 years. It's at the Essential Communications website, essentialcom.com. That's essentialcom with two M's.com. It just so happens that all four of today's reader letters relate to the topic of feedback. And that wasn't intentional on my part. It's just what happened to come into the inbox. In the archive, there are a lot of episodes about feedback. Five others you might listen to are discussing difficult behaviors, giving powerful feedback, handling defensive behaviors, soliciting feedback, and upward feedback. Okay, those are the resources for you. Let's get back to the reader letters.
This next email comes from Mairead, all the way from Galway, Ireland. In nursing, some matters aren't negotiable. Safety of patients comes first. Is there a time for coaching and a time for directing, telling nurses requirements for safety of patients?
Yes, there is. Yes, there is a time for coaching and a time for telling. I love what Mindy set up earlier, this idea of three different kinds of feedback, right? Evaluative, coaching, and appreciative. That's a great idea here. This idea of safety first, patient safety first, I think is critical. And I think a lot of this depends on the rules within the team. I've seen some nurse teams where the nurses are very collaborative, high trust, as Mindy just said, psychological safety. They really are willing to coach each other, give each other feedback, be direct with each other. They are working as a team, and all the nurses in that unit or on that floor work together. There are other nurse units that I've seen where, no, it really goes through the new nurse supervisor. So I think you're in an interesting position here, Mairead, around what is safe, what's appropriate. I don't think you want to be seen as a problem, but if it's actual patient safety, I do think you need to intervene. The question is, are you going to intervene with the nurse or are you going to intervene with the patient, right? Because you could just go in the room and maybe do something. I don't know. But if, like, the wrong medication is being given or the dosage is wrong, I do think this is critical. One of the questions that I would have is there a place for you as a team member to bring this up as a question for the whole team? How do we want to do this if we see it happen? Because, hey, patient safety is our first concern. Of course it is. So how do we want to handle that with each other and get some agreements about it?
The only thing I would add to this, Tom, is I think there's a bit of a short-term, long-term issue here at play, and that is in the short term, intervening to protect the safety of a patient is, of course, paramount. Longer term is the issue around coaching and developing so that those things don't happen again.
What's interesting to me as I reflect on all four of these today, it just so happens that all of them are actually have a big theme around feedback. Not all the same, but feedback is kind of the thread that unites them. And that was not intentional. I mean, look, you all sent the emails, right? We didn't plan this. But I do want to give an idea about feedback and then let Mindy also wrap up with her ideas about feedback. What I want to tell you all is that feedback is a really, really learned skill. I don't think most of us grow up delivering it, being good at it. I think it's something we learn. I certainly know that that's been my own journey. And I wrote about feedback so much in the first years of the Look and Sound of Leadership. There is a category in the archive called feedback. It's about receiving feedback. It's about giving feedback. Lots of different tips in there for you. So Jesse, Tomas, Lynette, Mairead, all of you, if you want resources, the archive is free. Jump in there, use the feedback filter, and take a look and see what will be helpful.
Yeah, and going back to that resource I mentioned earlier about thanks for the feedback, one of the other things that they mention in the book is part of the reason that feedback can be so difficult is that there's three triggers. And the triggers can be, number one, truth. So when we receive feedback and someone gives us a specific thing that they're saying, and the first question that can come to mind is, well, does it feel true for me or not? Is that true? So that can be one trigger. It's a truth trigger. Another one can be the relationship trigger. Like, what's the nature of the relationship I have with this person who's giving it to me? If it's their role because they're my boss, that's one thing. But even so, what's my relationship with my boss or my colleague? Is this person someone I see as being credible and actually looking out for my best interest? Because if it's not, I'm more likely to dismiss it. Even if it's valid feedback, I might dismiss it because of the relationship. And the last one, I think this is the most critical, and that is the identity trigger. Think about it. Like, we are all at work. You know, there's the idea that we're doing two jobs at work, the work we're paid to do and the work of protecting and projecting a certain identity, a sense of who we are. We spend a lot of time and energy consciously and unconsciously doing that. And feedback can really be a trigger to that identity. And so recognizing and being compassionate towards ourselves of, well, what's getting triggered here for me? And what's my relationship with receiving feedback? Because that's certainly going to impact your relationship with being able to give it. If it always feels wounding to me, I'm assuming that it's going to be wounding for you when I give you feedback. So it's just something to examine. What's your relationship with feedback? What's the history of it for you and why? And it's a great book to read.
That's it from Mindy and me. Until next time, I'm Tom Henschel. Thanks so much for listening.